Okay, so we've got Richard Ferguson from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and he'll be talking to us today about the use of aerial remote sensing platforms for evaluation of nitrogen and water stress in irrigated maize. And we did have a pointer.
I'll use a mouse.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Bob, and I appreciate the invitation to share with you today. If you came hoping to hear a quantitative direction of how this works, you're going to be disappointed. What I'm going to share with you is a bit of our journey over doing this over the last 17, 18 years, but it's still in progress. It's not something that I could say that we know exactly how to do this yet, but we've been learning things for a while. I'd like to also qualify that I am a soil scientist, not a remote sensing expert, so I know enough to accomplish what I would like to do in soils, but once we get very far, I lean on experts that I work with. I'd like to also acknowledge two of my colleagues, Brian Krenke and Bajesh Maharjan, as co-authors of the presentation. I'd like to start a little bit with where we started. This was where we began in 1998. I'd seen some other colleagues and other institutions start to use aerial sensing platforms for their soils-related research. Thought that sounded like something that would be worthwhile. So we began working with a remote-controlled club in Grand Island, Nebraska, who built and flew this aircraft for us. It's very interesting. The fellow who built this was in his 80s in 1998 when he built this system. He's no longer living now, but had stories of the early age of not really controlled aircraft. They would start up aircraft that radios didn't exist in the 20s and 30s. They just start the engine and let it take off and then hop in the Model A and see where it ended up. So the evolution in terms of regulatory oversight has changed a little bit. This gentleman in the picture is retired Army helicopter pilot who has flown our fixed wing and rotary aircraft for us for a number of years until we ventured into multi-rotor systems. This is our first quantitative use of these systems, 1999. Fortuitously, we had a wind event that came across a research farm that we had studies on. We're able to collect imagery, in this case, just standard slide, color slide. We used RDOS Imagine to quantify and detect the breakage of stalks from wind damage in the plots. We're able to find a high degree of correlation between what we could map on the ground and what we would see in the yield mapped data. But what we found was that the availability of sensors and our ability to process information with the systems that we had in the late 1990s were just fairly marginal. It was really hard to gain quantitative use of the imagery that we could collect. It was more a qualitative assessment of what we were seeing in our studies. So in the interim, we worked with a lower altitude system. This is Luciano Scirazzucci, who's now a scientist with Embrapa in Brazil. He was very diligent in his work looking at the use of integrated sensing systems for detecting both nitrogen and water stress of irrigated maize. With these kinds of systems, we could put something that was a little more quantitative into place. It took a lot of work to push this bicycle-based system through the field, but it gave us some very good information about how sensors could be integrated to detect water and nitrogen stress. So this particular platform had a couple of multispectral optical sensors, acoustic sensors to measure canopy height, and thermal sensors to measure canopy and air temperature differences. A couple of data slides that resulted from Dr. Scirazzucci's work. This was one study where we had interactions of nitrogen and water stress in place, field study. It's not always possible to create water stress depending on whether you have rain or not, but in irrigated systems in Nebraska, we were able to at least occasionally create that. So this was a study that looked at interactions of water stress created by either irrigation or lack of irrigation, and then nitrogen rates that were imposed. And what Dr. Scirazzucci found was that there are certain indices that are very useful in detecting, our primary goal was detecting nitrogen stress accurately in the presence of water stress. And in particular, these two indices, the DAT, which is not really an acronym, that's the name of the scientist that developed this index, and then the MTCI, were two indices that he found that could accurately quantify end stress in the presence of significant water stress. Inversely, some of these indices could be very useful in detecting water stress as well, and that could be useful for managing water inputs as well. One thing to note is that both of these indices use three bands, 760, 720, and 670, and those bands will come up in some comments that you'll see a bit later. We talk about additional sensors. One thing that Luciano was very diligent in was actually mapping whole fields with this bicycle-based system. Not sure that I could get students today to do that. That's a lot of work, but he would push this thing back and forth across the field. This is an example of a field where he used the integrated data. The top map is the temperature, canopy temperature difference from the ambient air temperature. And then the bottom map is a derived map of water stress from the canopy temperature difference, the canopy height difference, and then the optical reflectance information from these sensors. So that, I guess the take-home message is that driving or pushing a vehicle on the ground is one way to accomplish this, but then the next step is to just go up a little bit in height and automate that and put it onto an aerial platform. So where we've moved to in the last 4 or 5 years is using these small multi-rotor systems. The cost to use these is much less than some other options that we've looked at in the past. The reliability is decent, I would say. And we have the capability, at least, to put a variety of sensors on these. So this is one sensor system we're using. It's a Tetracam 5-band system with narrow bandpass filters in these five wavelengths. And you'll note 670, 710, and 800 nanometers are very similar to those three bands that I talked about earlier that we were using in the ground-based system. And then we began using 3 years ago an active sensor on an aerial sensing platform. This is a modified rapid scan from Holland Scientific. And again, the three bands that we have here are useful in detecting water stress as well as nitrogen stress. Now, in recent years, our work has focused primarily on nitrogen, but one thing to point out is that these three bands can also be used to detect water stress as well. This is an image from 3 years ago from one of our early studies. This was before we had modified our Tetracam sensor to have the incoming radiometric correction. If you'll notice in that image, it had an incoming radiometer sensor at the top of the system that intends to calibrate our systems, though we don't need ground-based reflectance measurements as well. This is an early image, just one band, 670 nanometers, over some of our research studies. This was a study looking at interactions of hybrid and N-rate. And small plots, generally we work in plots that are 10 feet by 50 feet wide or so. And the point here is to illustrate some of the constraints that we found with this sensor. Ideally, you would not see these boundaries between the images, and yet there are differences in reflectance that we see in the center versus the edge of the image. Now, the software of the sensor is intended to help correct this, but it has some limitations we've found. This relates particularly to the 10 nanometer narrow filter that we're using that creates this challenge. This is one of the image issues that we've run into using multispectral sensors is the fact that we do, at least with the systems we've used to this point, need a high degree of overlap to really be able to detect and accurately create multispectral vegetation indices. So coming back to where we are mostly headed in our work is the integration of a technology that's been around for 10 or 15 years now of active sensors with an aerial sensing platform. So if this works, we'll see. I've got a short video that shows how these things work on the ground. Basically, it's going across the field, and as the sensor detects the status of the of nitrogen in the crop, it creates a map of a vegetation index in this case. And then through prior research, this is correlated with fertilizer rate, and so the applicator automatically adjusts the rate of fertilizer application on the go. And we're not quite proposing that a UAV-based platform do both of these functions, but the UAV platform is a potential tool to mount these sensors on, from which then we could manage in various ways. So another short video maybe, and I apologize for the audio. There's not much interesting in the audio. I'll see if I can shut that off here. But so this is an image of a couple of years ago when we're doing some calibration of the active sensor over turf, in this case, a surface that has little complexity to the canopy geometry, but we've created a range of crop response by imposing N rates on the turf. And our interest in this study was to explore the height sensitivity of these sensors. They're designed for use 1 to 2 meters over the crop canopy. And so we were doing some evaluation of really what is the range of this particular sensor for detecting nitrogen stress at various heights. The control accuracy, within, if you're just a meter over the crop canopy, there's not much room for error there. And so we wanted to know how high could we actually go and still collect accurate information. We calibrated this as well against a passive sensor, the Tetracam sensor. So the background image here is the normalized difference red edge reflectance from the Tetracam, the grayscale. And then the points on here within each of these NRA blocks are the normalized difference red edge reflectance with the active crop canopy sensor. And for the sake of time, we'll just kind of share primarily the results of the height test study and the sensitivity to our N rates with the active sensor. So on the x-axis in this figure is the fertilizer N rate that we imposed. The y-axis is the vegetation index. And the lines basically are going down in terms of the index as we increase our height over the crop canopy. And we found in our analysis of the data that these primarily fell into two groupings. So the shallow or fairly low altitude groupings from 1/2 to 1.5 meter elevations tended to fall in one group. Elevations of 2 to 2.5 meters over the canopy fell into another group. Reasonable correlation to our N rates, but we tended to see that once we got over 1.5 meters that our sensitivity and accuracy with detecting stress tended to drop off. So with this particular sensor, and I would qualify this, that this is specific to this sensor and the power output of this active sensor, we found that the accuracy range for optimal use of this for detecting N stress was around 1/2 to 1.5 meters. I would point out that there are other sensors with higher output of power that actually are designed up to this point for manned aircraft use. And they've been used on manned aircraft in Australia and some other locations at elevations of 20 to 50 meters. Those systems were just a bit heavy for us to use on our unmanned systems. So we think that there is a good potential for overlap between an active sensor and an unmanned aerial sensing platform. We've also done a little bit of work using this system over a crop canopy of maize. So this is an irrigated maize study in central Nebraska last year. The background image is in place. It's a natural color image taken also from an unmanned aerial system. One thing to point out is that in this particular site, there is a high degree of spatial variation, and that's evident in the natural color image and then also in the data collected by the active sensor. These plots are only 10 feet by 50 feet long, and yet we can observe significant changes in canopy reflectance within those small plots. And That points out one of the benefits of a system that can detect at very small scale stresses and allow you to adjust at small scale based on the capacity of your system to make those adjustments. We found in this study a high degree of correlation between grain yield and the data that we collected with the unmanned aerial system. And again, we were collecting data from a height of about 1.5 meters over this crop canopy. We did see that there was variation within plots that had uniform treatment, but that was variation resulting from natural background soil variation rather than our treatment imposed variation. One last point to point out, and I kind of added this in at the last minute. We work a lot with those on our faculty who are more remote sensing specialists than myself. This is some data from Art Ziegelbaum and colleagues in our School of Natural Resources and the Center for Advanced Land Management Information Technologies. And one thing that Art has learned in some of his controlled work is that the fact that chloroplasts within cells tend to move in response to stress. Now, these imagery are not from Art. This is data from Yamada and others of a similar study where they imposed increasing levels of light stress on plant cells, and then with an electron microscope, or in this case, an optical microscope, looked at the chloroplast under stress. And what they've observed, and what Art has observed, is the chloroplasts tend to try to avoid stress, and they move to be shadowed by other chloroplasts. So at the top, the chloroplasts are more evenly distributed within cells. At the bottom, after, in this case, 3 hours of high-intensity light stress, there's much less evidence of chloroplasts than there were in the upper images. So that has implications for how we detect chlorophyll using remote sensing technology. In this case, a canopy sensor, whether it is passive or active, would not see these chloroplasts that are hidden by other chloroplasts. And this is work from Art looking at a vegetation index, in this case the green vari index, over plots, same plots, different times of the day. So in the morning, the blue line, higher vegetation index observations where there was less heat stress, in this case less water stress, compared to later in the afternoon. So in summary, just some take-home messages and areas that we're looking at in our research. We do think that unmanned aerial systems have tremendous opportunity to provide a way to detect and manage nitrogen and water stress at high spatial and temporal density, particularly in irrigated systems. I'm encouraged to hear speakers earlier today talking about advancement in sensors. We have found up to this point a real lack of good, accurate, lightweight, inexpensive sensors. And that may be a hard combination to come up with, but at least lightweight and accurate would be a good thing. And it's encouraging to see that those are in development. We do think that active canopy sensors have tremendous promise. They have advantages that the data is already georeferenced. There's no image processing, no georeferencing that's needed. The data comes back already in a spectral reflectance form, georeferenced. You can use these things day or night. It does not matter what time of the day. So there's potential they could be automated to collect data at night at low altitudes, really not bothering anybody other than whatever's out there in the middle of the night in the field. And I would suggest, based on research from others, not my lab, that the occurrence of chloroplast movement, this phenomenon, is something that we need to better understand and relate how that addresses concerns that we have related to crop stress and managing water and nitrogen in irrigated systems. So with that, if I have time, I'll see if there's time for questions. Thanks.
Yeah, we're up on time for the break, but I think if folks are okay, we can take some questions. But let's thank Dr. Ferguson.
Yes. If I understand your question, we were flying at a very low altitude over the crop canopy. And okay, is there any impact of the turbulence created by the props? To my knowledge, that's not an issue, but I can't say that quantitatively. We've not really measured that. As we get higher, there's less interference from turbulence from the props, but we also lose sensitivity in our sensors as well. Yes. Well, the question is, why would we fly at 1.5 meters? And that was an exploration of current technology. I think sensors are going to be available that will allow us to fly at higher elevations. I think that one point is, though, that we can stay at elevations that are really not going to bother anybody else if we're only 10 feet or so off the canopy. Most spray pilots don't work much lower than that. I know that's a concern in Nebraska, is the spray pilot technology, but again, we would be avoiding them anyway, but we're in an airspace that's not populated otherwise. Certainly battery life is a limitation with these multi-rotor systems. These things will fly about 10 minutes. So we are working in small plot environments. We expect that battery technology is going to evolve, and that there's also some of our faculty, in fact, are looking at remote charging options, or you'd have the capacity maybe to map a section of the field, land, recharge, fly another section of the field. And if that were automated at night, that could all be going on its own, and you don't really need to be there to intervene.
Okay, well, let's